Hello, my name is Tony Reid. Welcome to GAY, a radio programme for LGBTI people and their friends on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM and other access radio stations around New Zealand. Today I am interviewing my favourite couple, really, as far as interviewees are concerned, anyway. If you've been on the planet recently, you'll realise that there was a documentary on TVNZ. It ran live a few weeks ago and is still on TVNZ on demand, called Trans and Pregnant, and it's the story of Frankie's pregnancy and the birth of Hiwa, which is now over a year ago, isn't it?
Almost 14, 15 months old. Almost 15 months old.
Almost 15 months old. So, from my point of view, I've seen mostly very positive results of that. Lots of people. The lady in the post office here said she was said it was fascinating to see. It's the first time she'd ever seen a man giving birth, which which I suppose was probably true. So, have the reactions to it gone well, or have you picked up any negative ones?
For the most part, the media and the feedback that we've seen have been really positive.
Yeah,
we have been interviewed by a whole lot of different newspapers or magazines, as well as our TV interview with TVNZ. And they all went really well. And the feedback that we've had, people reaching out, even today, I had an office worker come up to me, a colleague of mine, who just cried as soon as she saw me. And we generally have that reaction, particularly the birth scene. But it's not to say that there hasn't been any negative reactions. We know that the Daily Mail picked it up, and Sean Plunkett and his show picked it up, and they've been pretty vile. So I highly recommend people not want to look those things up, probably don't want to read those either. But we do definitely know that there's been some segments of the community that it's not been so welcoming.
I checked up on Facebook as we went along, and most things were positive. The really negative all seemed to be centred on one, by the article by Graham Adams on theplatform.kiwi. Have you come across that one? If you haven't, you're well spared. The article was a paean of praise to J.K. Rowling and the Gas Report and all the other things, and large numbers of there were already over 1,000 replies, which I don't, which I dipped into and decided I wasn't going to read many of them.
No,
it isn't. The intriguing thing I find is this assumption that women, in particular, critical women, particularly, make that the child is going to grow up terribly confused and blah, 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 and sort of all and not know what's what, which doesn't seem to me to accord with reality at all.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, I think in that vein, it's really interesting, because we've already had generations of, you know, same-sex couples raising children. We've already seen the positive outcomes for people who were brought up in queer households, generally better than in heteronormative. And quite frankly, heteronormative lifestyle, or, you know, even mainstream media or pop culture was anything to go by, we'd all be straight, and we definitely aren't.
No, I'm fully aware that these people have said exactly the same thing for years about children with same-sex parents. When challenged, the one I read back up and said, "Oh, well, they'll be terribly bullied." And I sat there and thought, "Yes, they'll be bullied if they're disabled. They'll be bullied if they're the wrong colour or wrong all sorts of things." The way you tackle that is tackling bullying, not deciding to withdraw the supposed cause of the bullying.
Very special kind of unhappy person to get angry at two people who
yes, indeed.
love each other and absolutely love the child to the ends of the earth.
I fully agree with you. I suppose seeing what's about to happen in the USA to trans people in general, that we shouldn't be surprised that the typical attempt to sort of find scapegoats for the fact that the world's in a bloody mess include trans people. Anyway, to happier things, you were saying that generally the reaction to the documentary has been pretty positive.
Yeah, look, we were overwhelmed with messages. My phone started going off on the first dad break and it didn't stop for 3 hours.
God.
It took hours and hours to respond to everyone, which is lovely.
Yeah.
We heard from, you know, we had friends saying, I just want to connect you with my, elderly mother on Facebook so she can, you know, share her appreciation for the story. And, yeah. It's been really overwhelming how generous people have been in sharing what it meant to them to see that on screen.
Yeah. I think the shock for us was how many people of our generation were stunned that their parents or their grandparents were so open to watching a show like this and then also being so supportive of it.
Yes, it was on quite early in the evening as well, which fairly surprised me. I mean, I'm surprised there weren't... Perhaps more, children could be watching, as if they'd immediately catch something.
But yeah, the reaction, particularly around grandparents watching and being open, yes, has been quite profound for the younger generation, and I suppose it's also helped with healing.
Mm, and a lot of people gathered together to watch, with friends, family, former colleagues of ours had watching parties with, potluck dinners, and, people made a real event out of it as well.
Yes, that was good. Have you picked up any sort of reaction in sort of more official channels, those that might have some say in services to transgender people?
I think people, because we're on a number of advisory groups, so people have been quite open to watching and also learning from our experiences to help inform their design work for whatever service it might be, particularly at the moment we've been doing some work in maternity care, both bereavement and also in the development of some services. So that's been great. For the most part, we don't really know too much about what that might mean from a policy perspective or anything like that.
No.
It's a bit early, though.
Yeah.
And we have had a number of organisations reach out to us, particularly in the sort of perinatal support, going, this is a community that we've been trying to kind of connect with. Are you happy to come and talk to us?
What about?
Suppose the TV media and Herald and stuff have been really open and really surprised with some of the good feedback and also the reaction. So the commissioner that signed our contract for this documentary was just ecstatic with the final result. And really happy and pleased to see the numbers that it drawed on the night as well.
Yes, and I think, yes. Have you had any sort of contact with PATHA, or isn't it so relevant in your case?
No, we haven't, but I think Jen, for example, is quite busy on other co-papa at the moment around, the puberty blockers and other things.
Well, yes.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of the work in the design space for trans pregnancy came with that that report that came out about a year or so ago.
Yes, Warming the Funding.
Yeah, and so from a policy and thought leadership perspective, PATHA and other people who have been looking at inclusive birthing practices have done a lot of the work in that space already.
Mm.
And so we've just kind of highlighted a little bit of that journey, but actually given our life experience, the kind of light that we wanted to do so.
Yeah, and I had a number of trans people that I, have known over the years who, haven't been in touch for a long time, just message and say, I'm sorry I haven't reached out for, 7 to 10 years, but this is the journey that myself and my partner on, and it was really amazing to see that it was actually possible and it wasn't as hard as we perceive it to be. And, you know, so from our perspective, it's, you know, reached the right people when it's having the right impact.
Yes, and as we've discussed, I think, in previous interviews, you did a lot of preparation so that, in a sense, you were only caught out by sort of confused reactions in a few sort of fairly minor cases and not for most of the process.
Which... That's right. We certainly did have some confusion along the way, but we definitely put in a lot of effort to ensure that we were engaging with inclusive practices from the get-go. And there was only a couple of times, like, I think in Wellington we had an experience where the form didn't seem to meet the clinician's understanding of the person that was in front of them. Whereas in Rangiora, there was no eyes battered and they just got on with the job and did the blood sizz they required.
Yes. Yes, well, that's the case really across the medical community. My housemate decided to bring up the issue of PrEP with his doctor in the local health centre here in Waikanae, to discover that the doctor knew absolutely nothing about the situation, you know, and there was the patient telling him the basic facts. That can't be unusual.
Good care that, you know, the person you're sitting in front of who is providing the care is the one that's the student, not the so to speak.
Yes, and I think that has been underlined, hasn't it, in the recent report on puberty blockers, which I was sort of asking you about, is that basically it's just the report so far has just said, well, those that prescribe puberty blockers should know what they're doing, should know what's happening, should be experts. And I suspect that isn't only always the case, just because of the health system is so stretched at the moment, and you know, especially a sort of a minority consideration could well not have been considered in a GP's situation before.
Well, I mean, we know that in their training, you know, trans people barely feature, and disability and all manner of very normal and regular occurring things in the population. So, you know, and I said this in another forum, it's, you know, quality of care is greatly degraded when time is taken away from clinicians. I mean, you can't possibly deliver excellent care despite best efforts if you only get 10 minutes with someone.
Yes, I mean, that's one reason I don't go to the doctor on some things. I think it'll just be a waste of 10 minutes. because it's been discussed before. I did mention the Ministry of Health report, which has been in the news recently, and it all seemed quite sort of reasonable. Yes, people prescribing puberty blockers should be experts in that particular situation. And if they're not, yes, there might well be problems. So that report in itself didn't seem to be the cause of much concern. But there do appear to be movements within the governing parties to restrict the use of puberty blockers, possibly more than is happening at the moment. So I wondered if you, with your presumably greater knowledge on these issues than I...
gatekeeping, ultimately, you know, they have in recent years moved to allow GPs to prescribe hormone replacement therapy for trans people.
Yes.
And so they can do the same with blockers. And I think, sure, yes, you want a clinician who knows what they're doing, but actually how about we train all GPs to be able to be competent in providing gender-affirming care if asked? So I think while, you know, on some level people see the report and they go, oh, that makes sense, I think there is an element of it's restricting access to communities that really need it. I mean, you think about rural communities, you don't often have any choice as to who you see. And so, you know, in my case, 12 years ago, I actually had to move to get the care I wanted or needed, actually.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be the case, but yeah.
But it can be, and in that case, they won't blame the fact that the health service isn't sufficiently resourced to do that and to do many other things, and the blame will be put on the, as it were, on the puberty blockers, and indeed the experts. That's why I asked about PATH, which is the Professional Association for Trans Health, if people are wondering what we're talking about, because that is the CAS report, as we know, very explicitly rejected anything from PATH at all, because they were considered to be the people who were making what she considered claims that they couldn't prove about the efficacy of puberty blockers. And as you know, the UK has gone into a situation where it's now almost impossible to access them.
Yep, and people will die. Young people will die.
Yeah.
I would have been saved, you know, 10 years of absolute anguish and not wanting to live if I had had access to puberty blockers. And I think there's a total disregard for evidence half the time. People like to go on the vibe and they like to go with scaremongering and, you know, all things protecting children's safety, but they're not protecting the children's safety. They are putting them at greater risk by restricting access.
Yes, indeed. And it was interesting that I'm sure I read somewhere that although the report, the recent report said that the research and the over the use of puberty blockers was not conclusive, they then said the opposite, that there was also very little evidence that they were doing any harm. And it's interesting that that hasn't been picked up by the media in anything like the same degree.
Well, they can't monetize something that's not scandalous, so of course they'll look for a
scandal. No, indeed. But I presume it's something we've got to watch, seeing what is happening in other countries.
But I mean, I think we've got to be really careful when politicians try to tell doctors how to treat, you know, people, because I think sometimes with people think that when something is a political issue and they divorce it from a person, they think they can make choices about how I might choose to live my life. But actually, it's none of their business. I have to be happy with my quality of life. Yes. It doesn't impact me.
Yes, certainly. But presumably, this might have to be a struggle that is eventually imported into New Zealand from elsewhere, and I suppose we just have to be prepared for it.
Yes, I think the thing that we've seen consistently over the last 6 years is that allies have strengthened their resolve and have shown up in person, online, to really, you know, support the trans community. So that will only continue, I have no doubt.
Which is very important. One just hopes the political leaders pay attention to that.
Yes, time will tell.
time will tell. But you're not, are you? But you're not particularly fearful that we're entering a more difficult period.
Look,
New Zealand.
I need to be trans, and you know it's deeply impacted by political rhetoric, but also you know, with the age of the internet, we're increasingly influenced by geopolitics to a degree that we haven't been before. And when you're a minority group and your rights can be taken away so easily by a majority that simply doesn't understand, there's always a fear that we could go backwards.
Yes, yes, indeed. And and we've seen it all before, haven't we? I mean, exactly the same things have been said about gay, lesbian, and bisexual people over the years.
Yes, I mean, people were worried about people marrying their animals, inanimate objects, and all sorts. And you know what? The world hasn't stopped spinning, and things just keep on rolling. So,
yes. But they don't seem to learn, especially the American electorate. But that's another issue. But in the meantime, I think you've managed to create a documentary which has personalized and has brought out the positive side very strongly.
It seems to resonate with a lot of people. Yeah. It doesn't matter, age or gender or what have you. I think everybody can see quite easily by watching the documentary the amount of love that the story tells. And I strongly think that that's why we've had such a strong response in the positive, is that people just see this as being part of the normal day life. It's so beautiful. We've had comments of just such warmth that I think the way that we told the story this way meant that it was quite gentle, and it wasn't in a way kind of like a political activism message that, you know, when we did the marriage equality campaign, we were deliberately saying this is what we want, whereas this was just a camera following us for the 3 years or so, showing two people who loved each other that wanted to start a family, and we had a beautiful outcome as a result.
Yeah, but also the story's got lots of layers, and one of my dear friends from university said, you know, there's something for everyone in it. You know, they might not be trans, they might not have a trans person in their life or another member of the rainbow community, but a lot of people can relate to, you know, perinatal bereavements such as miscarriages and other elements of the story.
Mm. Yeah. Disability seemed to be a strong factor for a lot of resonation as well.
Yep.
I think that is a strong point. I always felt that with intersex, that, you know, you were getting exactly the same sort of negative responses from some people over a situation which nobody can argue is in any way a choice, and yet it didn't really seem to make much difference in how intersex people have been treated compared to gay, lesbian, and transgender.
I mean, there's a stark difference in some respects. Obviously, there's, you know, a history of medical intervention in young children to correct and
yes, indeed,
all sorts of awful things, which has obviously parallels to the trans experience and the rainbow experience in time gone by. But it's sort of, because it's quite a different situation, I think people's ignorance really plays out in how they relate to the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's still relevant for the rainbow community to still step in and be allies for intersex people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, with the ILGA World Conference, and that shows every time that people go to the World Conference that intersex people still like to have their own space and privacy to talk.
Yeah.
So it's not as threaded through the rainbow community as, say,
no.
the sexual community or even lesbian or trans community. And that, so we've still got a long way to go to support sex people.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm looking at the clock and we're coming up to 30 minutes. We always manage to fill the time without too much difficulty, I think. So, again, I would encourage anybody, any listener who hasn't seen the documentary, it's still available on TVNZ On Demand and presumably will be for a while. And, again, congratulations on being on producing something like that that is able to personalise what for many people was just a sort of strange situation, you know, when you, if you actually just describe it abstractly, but you have managed to sort of personalize it and make it strong. So thank you very much for yet another interesting interview.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You can hear this program again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. or Thursday at 5 p.m. It is also available on our website at www.coastaccessradio.org.nz or just Google Coast Access Radio Kapiti Gay. This is Tony Reid for GOI on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM and other access stations around New Zealand. Thank you again, Rawa and Frankie.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the Access Media website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.